owe a debt to anyone except the debt that binds us to love one another. If you love your neighbor, you have fulfilled the law. The commandments, no committing adultery, no killing, no stealing, no coveting, and all the others are summed up in this one. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love never wrongs anyone. And because of this love, it's a fulfilling of the law. Well, one of the things that I was remembering this week was that when I was growing up, I don't know how many of you have the same experience, but I was a member of a lot of different churches. I was talking with Carrie the other day about how many churches, perhaps, I had gone to in my life, and I counted up about 16. Now, five of those I don't remember because I was too young. My father was in the Air Force, and so we moved from place to place. But 11 of those, I can pretty much remember. We were there at least a year or longer at 11 of those churches that I've been a part of, either in my family, nuclear family life, or my life as an adult. And I was thinking to myself about those churches the other day and thinking, what kind of memories do I have of those churches? And even as a kid, you also have a memory. If you think back to the churches you might have been involved to, if you're a child who went to church, your parents took you to church, think back to the memories you might have had about it. Were they pleasant memories? Do you feel happy when you think about certain places? Do you feel a little sad when you think about certain places? It's interesting to think back, and as I was thinking back to the many different kinds of churches I've been involved with, some of them, as you know, my story, I was raised in a much more theologically conservative household, and so some of the churches that I was raised in were not progressive churches at all, and the theologies that they espoused would be things that were, in some ways, kind of horrifying each day, but still, it's interesting that when I remember some of those communities, I have good memories. Even the ones that, theologically speaking, might have been quite different than where I'm at, theologically speaking, now. And so I was wondering to myself, why is it that I have kind of good memories about some of those places that I probably wouldn't choose to attend as a member nowadays just because of the way that my thinking has changed? It's an interesting question. And I remembered again that at least once a year, it's good to kind of look around this thing see our wall hangings, which tell things that are true. On this side, we have the big word, salvation. That's what Christianity purports to be about. And on the other side, we have this big wall hanging that says, see those Christians, how they love one another. And I was thinking to myself that one of the things that is a connecting point to all those different communities of faith I was in when I was a kid, I think back and have good memories about them. They were places where I could tell that people actually loved one another in the building. And they did things together with one another. I remember one church I was part of where the congregation, which was small at that time, it was a new church plant, decided to just set people loose to do the things they enjoyed on the property. So one person built a pond in the front of the church property. Started stalking the fish because he was the people in the church liked to fish. Well, my buddies and I, when we were in early high school, we just decided we were going to just do some cranks and we filled that fish with carp. Every time we would catch a carp, we would throw it into the pond to bug the older guys who liked to fish the basket. And another place that I went to another time in this church, some people thought it would be nice to have a little place where we could gather outside. So they built a kind of old-fashioned brush arbor, a big fire pit, and they would say, oh, we come over now, fire is during the summer, and sing songs around the fireplace, and they would do that. Today, there would be no way I would ever choose to go to that particular congregation because of the difference where I'm at mentally and theologically. I probably wouldn't choose to go to that particular place, but it's interesting that I have good memories of the place because I have good memories of people really getting along with each other and loving each other. If someone was sick, people would go out and bring food. And if someone had a type of transition in their life, cards would be sent, flowers would be sent, visits would be made, prayers would be raised for that person. It was a community where people actually think back to this verse in Romans, where Paul says, "Owe no debt to anyone." Boy, it would be good to stop there. It would be great if you could actually owe no debt to anyone. That's a sermon in itself. It's very difficult, my day, just to live that way. It wouldn't be great to go. Anyway, owe no debt to anyone except the debt that binds us to love one another. Sometimes we think about Paul, we think that Paul is one of these fellows who came along and messed up the simplicity of Jesus' main commandment to love God, to love your neighbors yourself, with all sorts of dogma and doctrine. But it's interesting that there was a time in my own life about 4 years after I had become an ordained minister that I really read through Paul's words carefully once again and found out how many times Paul really comes back to the centrality of this one word, love. That it's all about love and loving one another and caring for one another. In the face of our own and each other's and society's brokenness, what is the first thing we must do? Rain down judgment? Analyze something? Rescue someone? Give some food? Provide some housing? Lobby for change? Organize a protest? Incite a revolution? Now, not that any of those things are bad. Sometimes we need to do all of those things, and those are appropriate responses to whatever it is that we see outside. But the first thing we have to do, and this is so important for all of us in the Christian community to remember, the first thing we have to do is to care. To actually just care for the other people around us. The people that are closest to us. The people who are most affected by the brokenness of. And it's that simple message, love one another, owe no debt to anyone but the debt you have to love one another, that is one of the hardest things to do. That's why in the ancient medieval tradition, they talked about love as the queen of the virtues, that it's the last to be fully attained because it is made up of all the other virtues, patience, gentleness, kindness, truth-telling, meekness, care, forgiveness, sincerity, integrity, all these things that are virtues are actually virtues of love. You can't really express love to any person fully without all the component virtues of it. And so it is the last to fully be manifested. But it's the first, as a human, we know to be important. When we feel our mother taking us into our arms, and being alone to us outside of the womb. It's interesting that the word womb in Hebrew, in ancient Hebrew is rakam, in modern Hebrew rakem, but the word for compassion is rakamat. Practical womb. The first duty we have as Christians is to be a womb of compassion for those around us, to genuinely and really care. William Sloane Coffin, who's a famous preacher at Riverside Church in Manhattan, but also was a very outspoken anti-Vietnam War activist, wrote a book in which he said, "Love, and you are a success, whether the world thinks so or not. The highest purpose of Christianity, which is primarily a way of life and not a system of belief, is to love other people. And you'll discover that the first fruit of the love that you share is joy." We get so tied up in the complexities of all it is that we're doing and all that needs to be done. And in looking at the brokenness of the world and in analyzing it and understanding it and all that work needs to be done. But down at the base of everything, at the center of all of our duty, and at the starting point of what it means to truly become human, is the opening up of our heart to the very heart of God, which is the womb of compassion, and of allowing ourselves to be that womb of compassion for other people. And it's interesting in this text that Paul says, "Love your neighbor as yourself. Love never wrongs. And it fulfills the law." So there's that part of love that is to do no harm. The first step of love is to do no never wrongs, but it also fulfills the law. I don't think there's a do no harm, and a lot of people can put up with their neighbor and do no harm to their neighbor, but not ever really get to the point of actually actively loving their neighbor and actually making the phone call and actually bringing food over and actually being there with an arm just for someone to live. It's the fulfilling of the law. And so just today, as we end up, I want to read once again this paraphrase of 1 Corinthians 13 that I found written based around Eugene Peterson's The Message Bible. And just listen to it once again, because here's old Paul reinterpreting the basic teachings of Jesus. Though I may be a gifted speaker and can pray and sermonize and advocate and argue for what's right, surprisingly well, anytime, anywhere, if I don't love others, I'm only making noise without substance. And although I seem to have an answer for everything, and people come to me to hear my wise opinions, and though I appear to be an inexpressible force for good, the fact is, if I have no love inside, I'm nothing. And though my generosity is well known to my college and political party and church, and in my life I've sacrificed much for the good of others, with wounds and scars to prove it, if I have no love, what have the people closest to me really profited by me? So how can you tell whether or not you have what matters most? Love smiles through the pain of being hurt, criticized, misunderstood, and ignored. Without complaint. Love never confronts anyone unless it's with a respectful and well-considered word. Love doesn't judge or want what others have, their clothes, cars, job, partner, house, money, even their personality. It doesn't go around talking about God being unfair when the real problems are usually greed and envy. Love avoids the limelight. It doesn't mean a whole lot of ego stroking. Love declines to make a scene about things. It doesn't make mountains out of molehills. It will not choose inappropriate ways to make a point. It doesn't have to be right all the time. And it slowly gets stirred up about every tale that happens to be spreading through the grapevine. Real lovers don't wear their feelings on their sleeves. They don't assume that others are thinking and intending the worst. They give everybody a second, third, and fourth chances and the benefit of the doubt. Love suffers when someone fails, when tragedy strikes, or when someone's hopes are dashed. It takes no pleasure in anyone's brokenness. Love rests in confidence that the truth will win out over time, even when that truth may hurt a little in the telling. Love lends its shoulder to bear the burdens of others and never breaks that confidence. It believes the best in people and tries hard to trust them. And when love is disappointed or burdened by the weight it's bearing, believing and hoping, it still endures with resilience and restraint, always continuing to be its pure, sparkling self. These three forces have always motivated God's people: faith and hope and love. And we can't be spiritually mature without inviting these three into our lives. But as necessary as each one of these is, on the top of the list, you'll always find love. Romans 13:8. Owe no debt to anyone except the debt that binds us to love one another. For if you have loved one another, you have fulfilled the law. Oh God, we are reminded again that true salvation is to let go of what binds us and to open our hearts to your very self, compassion, that is you, O God, that is love. May we open ourselves to others.